This morning is number 14-8006, Harrison against the Department of Justice. Mr. McGonigal.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I'd like to make three points, but first I wanted to address the Court's inquiry concerning the application of the case of Brooks v. Dunlop Manufacturing. In the Brooks case, this Court concluded that the retroactive application of amended Section 292 to pending actions was a rational means of pursuing a legitimate legislative purpose. In that case, the Court allowed the statute to wipe out current pending claims under the Quitam Act. In our case, we've got the same rule that would apply, but with a different result. With a rational basis analysis, the government still has to show that there was a legitimate legislative purpose and that they used a rational means for achieving this rational government purpose. In this case, there is a provision in the Dale Long Act which the government construes as giving it the right to apply retroactive regulations throughout the entire Act, throughout the entire Public Service Officers Benefits Act. We don't read it that way, but even if we were to take the government's reading of that Act, they have identified as the only legitimate legislative purpose the need to have a uniform rule for these cases. That was the term. Yes.
Let me sort of take you back to the basics here, because putting aside the retroactivity question and the due process questions, your argument presupposes that the original regulation allowed for recovery for mental health issues.
Yes.
That as long as they flowed from the physical traumatic injury.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But here, as I understand the factual record, you have a finding by the workers' compensation group saying that they're totally independent. That, in other words, that she may have suffered from PTSD, but it wasn't caused by her knee injury.
That was a decision made by the Workers' Compensation Commission in South Carolina. This is a decision that would have to be made by the director of the of this particular agency in the Department of Justice after reviewing all of the facts and considering all of the factors involved in this case. Our client was severely injured physically on the job that she required knee replacement surgery 7 years later. So we have a serious physical injury, but of course we've got a total psychiatric disability as a result. Now whether
when you say total, it's a, what 18% is what.
18% was something that was quoted by a doctor back in shortly after the accident. In the course of time, that 18% figure is proven to be false. However, where we are procedurally here, it would be up to the director, once she has actually weighed all the evidence in front of her, to determine if our client is totally and permanently disabled.
But
she never made
that on it. If you achieved a remand, then the director could make the decision that her PTSD disease was not caused by a physical injury? You're saying that fact finding was made in Carolina but not made in the federal proceeding?
That's right. The director would have to make that decision independently.
So that was your answer to Judge O'Malley's question.
Yes, it was. And I think it
this... But what in the medical record shows that the PTSD flowed from the knee injury? I can envision mental health illnesses flowing directly from a traumatic physical injury. But there's nothing in the medical record that indicates that her mental health problems flowed from the knee injury.
Well, I think if you look at Dr. Beck's report, which the agency has put aside basically and not really given full weight to, I think that shows that the injury and all of the circumstances surrounding the injury were the cause of the psychiatric disability.
That's the problem, is that even under the best scenario, you're arguing that a mental health disease that flows from the traumatic injury.
Right.
But the fact that you might have an emotionally traumatic event and a physically traumatic event that are either close or even unified in time doesn't mean one flows from the other.
But it would be difficult to try to divide this up. If we could imagine circumstances in which somebody was attacked and didn't have an injury, and that would take us that's not this case. We have both the injury and the obvious psychiatric reaction to that injury. How one divides that up would be difficult to say. But again, that's a decision that the director would have to make on remand. She would have to basically try to, you know, how do you divide the line, saying Regina Harrison is totally disabled because of what happened, because of the injury to her knee, or she's totally disabled because four people attacked her. I don't think you can actually divide the two up. That's artificial. She was injured in the line of duty as a result of that injury. She's totally and permanently disabled. Now, again, the director has not made that final finding.
But again, what in the record would even allow the director to make that finding? Where in the record is there medical evidence that the one flowed directly from the other?
At this stage, I don't think that anybody could say, Dr. Becker, anybody could say that she would have been totally disabled if nobody had actually touched her, if she hadn't received the injury. I think the two of them work together. I think if we actually look at the language in the exception in the Yanko case, it said stress arising from the injury should be considered. And it would be difficult to imagine a circumstance in which somebody was suffering stress that wasn't the result of the actual confrontation itself. That we could be stressed out by the fact that you have a bad knee. But I think
your bottom line point is that the question hasn't really been presented for adjudication. So the reason why we haven't made a record yet to connect the physical harm to the PTS disease,
yes,
is you haven't had a forum in which anyone would listen to that argument.
So far, that's correct.
In the federal system.
So your position then also is that it doesn't matter. The record has a dozen different theories and different witnesses attributing different stories of the events that occurred. Your position is that it doesn't matter which of those is accurate because there is no question that some disability, some injury, some change had taken place.
I think that the agency would have to find that she was, in fact, the hearing officer in 2006, or excuse me, in 2004, found that she had been assaulted. That finding was not adopted by the director. She referenced that finding in her findings of facts, but that was never adopted.
Yes, I gather that there was no adoption, no finding, no balancing of these various theories, but no doubt that there was an injury of some sort, and that's what we're concerned with.
That's correct. And it's impossible, I think, to separate the physical injury and the psychiatric injury in this particular case. They all arose out of the same incident, and it would be up to the director to make that determination.
Could I just see if I've got your case in a nutshell? My understanding is that in order for you to prevail, you have to get access to the earlier regulation, because under the current regulation,
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
And in order to gain access to the current old regulation, you have to demonstrate that either that the statute is not retroactive,
correct,
or that if it is retroactive, it doesn't pass rational basis review.
That's correct, and we would argue on both.
So let me just say,
sure,
from a point of view on rational basis review, my understanding is that the government, which we'll hear from in a minute, its theory, its best and only theory coming out of the legislative history, is that the reason for retroactive effect, if it exists, was to have a uniform application and regulation.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So at the time the 2012 statute is enacted, that arguendo provides for the retroactivity,
yes,
the Congress knew that there had been a previous regulation that possibly would have allowed for recovery for a disease as a result of a physical injury.
That's the legal fiction.
The Congress also knew that there had been a subsequent regulation that would preclude such a recovery.
Right.
We know that in the legislative history that Congress had expressed a view that throughout, from the very get-go, the object of these awards had been not for only for the basis of physical, not mental implications. So isn't it possible that when the legislative history says we want uniform regulations, what Congress is saying is we want to have the, you know, you have the, all the regulations interpreted the same going backwards. So
but
that you, and our case law had said these regulations are essentially the same.
Your Honor, the problem with the test right now is this talk about a uniform rule. That's the only basis they have for it. They never said anywhere in the legislative history, they never used the word retroactive in the legislative history. They never pointed out what the scope of this regulation would be.
Right, but in my understanding of how rational basis review works is that the Congress doesn't even have to say in the legislation or in the legislative history what its rational basis is. A court simply has to be able to divine
right. A
rational basis. What I'm saying is I would like you to address why can't there be a rational basis when you say we have known for the longest time that it was the intent of Congress not to have awards for mental impairments, only for physical impairments. And we know that at the time the legislation was enacted, the regulation clearly provided the result that there would only be recovery for physical, not for mental impairment.
Well, first of all, the statute itself says physical personal injury, not physical injury. So that,
no, I understand that, but you know what I'm talking
about. If there had been something in the legislative history that said we're going to make the entire act retroactive, allow us to apply retroactive regulations to the entire act, then it would have been clear on its face. But there was none of that anywhere in the legislative history. This was a provision that nobody understood. And if you read it, the entire statute as it was presented, as Congress voted on it, it would appear to apply to the people who are applying under the Dale Long Act itself. It's a very convoluted...
Right, but I mean, doesn't your case get down to rational basis review in the end run no matter how you get it? Because even if the statute on its face isn't clearly retroactive,
mm-hmm.
then we have to ask whether or not the regulation is having a retroactive effect, which is what your lead
right.
blue brief said. And in order for the regulation to have retroactive effect, it has to pass due process muster.
Right. Right.
And so it seems to me that whether or not the legislation is retroactive on its face or whether only we're talking about a retroactive application of a subsequent regulation.
Right. So we get
process question boils to the same on the same kettle.
The problem is that the legitimate legislative goal that was identified in the legislative history and in the government's brief says that we're trying to establish a uniform rule. We already had a uniform rule. There was a uniform rule for this case that was in place when Regina Harrison filed her claim. The government is now claiming the right to change that rule at any time. It was changed in her case and can be changed in any future case. So the rational basis that is being put forward to achieve the legislative end is in fact the opposite. It's not providing clarity to the
applicant. Aren't I also correct in thinking that the Supreme Court has said to us that the rational basis can be actually pretty thin? I mean, the threshold level of rationality doesn't have to be overwhelming.
No, no, it doesn't.
In order
it doesn't.
For a retroactive measure to pass a due process muster.
My problem is that outside of Justice Kennedy's concurrence in Eastern Enterprises, nobody seems to have found that there was no rational basis in almost any case. But I think this is one of those cases because, again, there was only one rational basis found, the need for a uniform rule. We already had a uniform rule. The rational basis...
Well, I mean, when your case comes right down to the very, very bottom, the question is whether or not disease in the earlier regulation means a physical-based disease like a bone
right.
disease or a disease in your ear or whether it can include a mental disease.
That's correct, Your Honor. And part of our argument, we brought up the King v. Burwell case, is that this is a very important case because the way the government is reading this statute, it is deliberately discriminating against the mentally disabled, which is totally against national policy. And basically, they've attempted to write out the exception in the Yanko case so that they can basically say that personal injury only refers to physical
discrimination in this particular case, because discrimination, it's already been decided that that discrimination will be in the future. Anyone who is physically injured who has a residual mental disease going forward isn't going to get any recovery under this statute.
And I don't think that was the intention of Congress when they passed it. That's clearly not the plain
language. The question was snuff out the previous.
I'm sorry, when you say it's not the intention of Congress, I mean the House report is very detailed and basically makes it clear that at least the report says this statute is not intended to and was never intended to cover mental stress or strain, even if it comes in conjunction with a physical injury, and even if it's post-traumatic or otherwise.
The House report was written in the summer of 2012, and our client filed her claim 7 years before that. That is not legislation. That is verbiage that was put in. If you actually look at the positions that the agency has taken, the Yanko exception was based on a written agency position, and we think that at the very least the Yanko exception should be enforced, and the case should be remanded back to the agency and requiring them to enforce that exception and not go with whatever law was supposedly created in the committee report that was written 7 years after the claim was filed.
Okay, let's hear from the government. We'll save you rebuttal time. Mr. Secretary.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I think Judge O'Malley has precisely identified the narrowest and correct grounds upon which this Court can and should resolve this case, and that is that the record makes clear that the petitioner is not entitled to benefits in this case under either version of the regulations. And I would like to respond to some of the Court's concerns about that point. And the first thing that I think it's important to emphasize is that the Bureau has already repeatedly addressed and rejected Ms. Harrison's claim under the previous regulations. First in 2005, when the office ruled on and rejected her claim under the previous regulations. And that determination...
Well, where does that get us? I mean, the short of the matter is that Ms. Harrison is very clear in what she wants. She wants to be able to establish that she has a current disease, PTSD, and that disease has resulted from a physical injury in the line of duty. Now, I haven't seen any rejection of that particular theory by the agency at any step along the way.
I think that the initial determination of the Bureau's office in 2005 and then the first level of
review. Show me, not just talk the talk, show me somewhere in the record where this theory that Ms. Harrison now has in front of us had previously been adjudicated by the agency.
Certainly. And you're correct, Your Honor, that
it hasn't been done.
It has not expressly been rejected in so many words, but at a minimum it has implicitly been considered and rejected. And the reason for that is that...
So assuming for purposes of argument that the 2012 statute is retroactive, okay, and that as a retroactive statute it would have to pass due process muster under rational basis review.
Certainly.
What is the government's explanation of the rational basis?
I think there are at least two rational bases.
And what are they?
The first has already been mentioned and is discussed in our brief, and that is Congress's rational mandate to uniformly and consistently apply the current regulations to pending claims.
How does that's not exactly what the legislative history says. It just says uniform application regulations, right?
Well, the House report also specifically mentions that in the year before the House report, that the Bureau was working with over 700 claims and that the Bureau has, quote, struggled to keep abreast and must be provided with adequate means to enable it to administer the program and determine claims under the law more efficiently than it does at the present. And the House report went on to say that this legislation makes certain changes of a technical or administrative nature to the PSOBA and related law that should help to expedite the administrative processing of these legal claims against the federal government and clarify congressional intent with regard to certain matters. And by mandating the consistent application of current regulations without regard to when claims accrued or when claims were filed.
Does it say consistent application of current regulations? Are you reading from the legislative history?
I'm not now reading from legislative history.
That business about applying current regulations, that's the department's gloss, isn't it?
No, that is Congress's gloss in the House report, Your Honor.
And I didn't see that the House report actually said they were going to want to have application of current regulations.
The House report defines...
Does that mean the record?
The House report does not specifically say that the justification applies to that particular aspect of the amendments. What the House report says is that that rational basis justifies, in general, the Dale-Long Public Safety Act of 2012, which includes, among other things, the retroactivity provision. And has already been pointed out earlier this morning, even if Congress had made no statement whatsoever about the purpose for the amendments at that time, all that is necessary under rational basis review is for the Bureau to identify or for the court to divine such a rational
basis. What you're saying is the dots are there to be connected.
At a minimum. And I also think it's important to point out that there's another rational basis that this court should consider in addition to simply streamlining and expediting claims in a uniform fashion. Retroactivity also serves the rational purpose of allowing the Bureau to promptly and efficiently adjust the terms or procedures of the program consistent with the statute and with the Bureau's broad grant of rulemaking authority to promote the fair and judicious allocation of limited funds under the program, which is something that Congress very well could have rationally concluded would be desirable in response to potentially changing nature of claims or questions about the meaning of certain regulations as has arisen in this case. Now, getting back to the diseases which may arise as a result of physical injury clause in the pre-2006 version of the regulation, which is the only basis upon which petitioner argues that she is entitled to relief. There are a few points I would like to make. First, by definition, PTSD, like the vast majority of psychological and psychiatric conditions, is a disorder, not a disease.
Let me ask you a question about how, when the statute was changed, and from what you've read to us, there were 800 pending cases. Were those cases immediately taken up, reviewed, and resolved insofar as any psychiatric component or other than physical injury was involved?
Well, to clarify, Your Honor, I believe the House report stated in excess of 700 claims were pending at that time, and that was prior to the House report. To answer your question, the regulations in question went into effect on September 11th, 2006. And before and after the new regulations went into effect, the Bureau and this Court and Congress have only consistently ever said that no claimant is entitled to benefits under the Public Safety Officers Benefits Act for any sort of...
Whether then all of the pending cases were promptly reviewed and to the extent that they would have been changed based on the interpretation that you're presenting?
I don't know. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Well, in order to the contemporaneous response of the agency that undoubtedly had a hand in explaining to the Congress why new legislation was needed, that's my question. Did they immediately impose it retroactively or let those cases that were present and unresolved take their course?
Meaning, did they immediately oppose the new regulations retroactively or the... Yes, my understanding and this is that the 2006 regulations, which went into effect on September 11th, 2006, have consistently been applied to cases pending before the board as of that date and later, as of the date when the new regulations were enacted, consistent with
Even before the 2012 amendments?
Oh, I apologize. I had missed you on the point.
The 2006 regulations, right, which were planning an
point,
earlier
correct.
Regulation that had the disease possibility in it.
I don't know, Your Honor, and I don't know that there's anything in the record to answer that question.
I think what Judge Newman, the presiding judge, was asking about what happened in 2012, you enact
right.
legislation in which the agency has said to Congress, we've got these 700 cases that are burdening. Yeah, they're a little difficult. And I think what she was asking was what happened to them. Did somebody go through them and say, whoops, this has got a mental claim in it. It's no good, no good, no good down the line.
If I may try responding to Judge Newman's
yes,
question accurately.
And you could understand.
Yes.
Undoubtedly, the agency was responsible for this change. And to get a sense of legislative intent, I think nothing speaks more clearly than how they administered it the day after it was enacted.
Certainly, meaning the regulations. So Your Honor is referring to the gap between 2006 when the regulations were amended and 2012 when Congress expressly mandated retroactive application. I do not know how the Bureau handled individual cases in the intervening period, but what is clear from the case law and the record is that the practical result was no different, because whether the previous regulation was applied or whether the new regulations were applied, the Bureau has always consistently denied claims for disability benefits hinging on psychological or psychiatric injuries, whether or not there is an alleged associated physical injury.
Well, then what was the purpose of the change of law if it wasn't intended to make a change?
The purpose of the change was to clarify, to make more clear that consistent with the Bureau's historical practice, that these are not the sorts of injuries which are compensable under the Act. And this gets to a second point that I wanted to make.
Why did Mr. Harrison's claim sit with DOJ for 6 years?
There are several reasons.
She comes up in 2006, right? And
yes.
Then we don't get an answer until after the statute's passed.
There are several reasons for that, Your Honor. There were extensions requested by both sides at various points in the intervening 7 years. Ms. Harrison had to be examined by several doctors. So there's no one reason that we can point to. I would say that there were several reasons. Now, to get back to the meaning of the deleted diseases clause in the original regulation, in the pre-2006 version of the regulation. I mentioned that post-traumatic stress disorder is a disorder, not a disease. But even assuming that it is a disease...
And you're just taking that from what, the DSM?
The definition, just the post-traumatic stress disorder.
Why is it... Who decides it's not a disease and it's a disorder?
It is.
You said that. Garland in the dictionary? I mean, who told you that?
I'm strictly reading the term at face value, but even if it were a disease, I think the more important point is that it is...
Schizophrenia is a disorder, isn't it?
It may be. And I think that most psychological and psychiatric conditions are disorders and not diseases, because psychological and psychiatric conditions tend to be harder to diagnose, I think.
Is the term disease defined in the statute?
No. Occupational disease is defined, but not disease.
But the agency hasn't, by regulation, provided that PTSD is not an occupational disease, right?
Well, that is something that may come up on remand if for whatever reason this court were to remand. I don't believe that has been addressed. But the second point I wanted to make is that even if PTSD were a disease, it still would not qualify under the diseases clause, because by definition, post-traumatic stress disorder is caused by exposure to traumatic stress, not necessarily physical injury. And in this case, there is at a minimum substantial evidence in the record, which is
standard. It's called post-traumatic stress disorder, right?
Yes.
And so it means you're supposed to have some stress, right?
Yes.
And those of us that have lived, for example, having a hip replaced, we know what stress is, because you can't sleep at night because of the physical disorder.
Absolutely. And is it possible...
So you're not suggesting that it's frivolous to suggest that PTSD could is a stress that could emanate from a physical impairment.
No, certainly not frivolous, Your Honor. And it, indeed, is it possible that a physical injury could, in some cases, cause traumatic stress, which in turn...
The point of Ms. Harrison's case here is that she'd like to have an adjudication and a forum about these things we're talking about right now.
Well, I think there are two answers to that. The first, as I mentioned, is that this has already been decided twice by the board.
Well, you've admitted to me that the precise question hasn't been decided. You said it was decided by implication. And that just, for my vote, won't cut the mustard.
Well, I appreciate that, Your Honor. Well, the other point I would make then is that at a minimum, regardless of how this court reads the office's initial determination and regardless of how this court reads the administrative hearing's subsequent determination and the final decision, in any event, the standard of review under Amber Messick is simply whether there is substantial evidence in the record to support the Bureau's final determination. And if you read the director's final determination, and if you particularly look at the appendix to that final determination, there is at a minimum substantial evidence in the record to show, to support the conclusion that Ms. Harrison's PTSD was caused by, if anything, the justifiable and understandable trauma of being exposed to this very stressful assault and not by the physical injury of her knee.
Substantial evidence is that amount of evidence that anyone could make a reasonable decision on. And the fact that the evidence you're talking about is in the record, there's also the evidence in the record that Ms. Harrison has suffered a great deal as a result of the physical injury and has therefore had stress.
I think that is precisely my point, Your Honor.
The record that you tell me lacks substantial evidence to support her disease, physical/disease theory. I'm just saying there's plenty of evidence in the record that would support that theory.
But this court's standard of review is not whether there is arguably some evidence to support her theory. The standard of review under Amber Messick is whether there is any substantial evidence to support the Bureau's finding.
But you're not telling us that the substantial evidence standard applies to the statutory or regulatory interpretation. You're just saying forget all that, take the government's view, and then see if it's supported.
Right. I'm saying even assuming that retroactivity is out of the picture and even assuming that the board were to look at this a fourth time under the deleted other diseases clause, that there is at a minimum substantial evidence to support the decision that the Bureau has already made three times.
On the government's theory that it's not retroactive, it is retroactive.
No, Your Honor. This assumes that the court finds that it's not retroactive because at a minimum, what the evidence shows is that Ms. Harrison's PTSD, that there is at a minimum substantial evidence to support the Bureau's finding that her PTSD was not caused by physical injury in and of itself, so in so much as it was caused by the traumatic exposure to the very stressful and understandably traumatic circumstances of responding to a prison fight. And
so you're saying even if we accept the proposition that we're operating under the old regulation, and we accept the proposition that the old regulation says what Ms. Harrison's counsel says that it does, you think there's still substantial evidence to justify the rejection of it?
Absolutely, and I think that's very clear in the director's final determination and in the appendix attached to the director's final determination where he discusses...
But there wasn't a decision on that fact.
A decision on...
Just as you've described it.
I would say there was a decision. The director cited all of the evidence, and as Your Honor has pointed out, there is some evidence in the record to go both ways.
However, my point is the director didn't say, assuming that what Ms. Harrison is trying to do is to say I have a disease, the disease is connected to a physical injury, and then the response to that is, no, your disease is connected not to the physical injury but to something else. There isn't there that specific finding isn't in the record.
I don't know if there's a transcript from every proceeding that Ms. Harrison had in the record,
you have to live with what we have in front of us. So why
right.
Isn't there a chienery problem with your theory? Why aren't you asking us to affirm the agency on ground that the agency didn't itself expressly decide on this particular point you're talking about?
Your Honor, our position is that the director's final determination...
Yeah, but just answer my question. You know what chienery says? Chienery says we can't affirm on a ground that was not articulated by the agency, especially where factual considerations and the expertise of the agency is what would have driven the decision, right?
Yes.
So on your alternative ground position there at the end you put that was well summed up by Judge O'Malley, I wonder why there isn't a chainery problem with that.
All I can say in response to that, Your Honor, is that I believe that all of the facts are in the director's final decision and in the appendix, and that those facts...
Well, right, and that's what chainery is all about. The facts are always in a record. And what an appellate court did for a while was to say, well, boy, if I had been looking at those facts, I would have made a specific decision, A, and I'm going to apply that from the bench. The Supreme Court said you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to go back where, especially where it's driven by the facts,
you're supposed
to let the agency speak first.
Well, I would also point out that...
I mean, I'd sort of say nice try on that one, but I think there's a chainery problem.
I would also point out, Your Honor, that the Bureau repeatedly referred to the Yanko decision in justifying the decision that was made three times to deny petitioner's claim for benefits. And the import of Yanko is clearly that this type of psychological, this mental stress and strain claim.
Yanko, the facts there were different because in Yanko
yes.
there was no physical injury. So we have to presuppose here that there is a physical injury, and now we're sort of operating under the question. You said even for purposes of this argument, you're willing to say, okay, even if we're under the old regulation, and even if the old regulation contemplates mental health issues that flow directly from the physical injury. That takes us out of Yanko, doesn't it?
Yes, but the point that I was trying to make, Your Honor, is that the Bureau repeatedly cited Yanko and applied Yanko to the facts of this particular case in denying Ms. Harrison's claim. So it's not as if the Bureau simply cited all of these facts in a vacuum and denied her claim without any explanation at any step of the way. The Bureau
sort of ties up tighter to your rational basis review argument. But this is the agency consistently has been saying over and over and over again, our awards have to be totally and exclusively based on physical impairments.
That's exactly right, Your Honor, and not just the agency, but also the Congress, and also this court, not just in Yanko, but also in the Curtis and in the Porter decisions. So at a minimum, Congress had a rational basis for mandating.
We have a dicta, at least in one of our cases, that says the regulations are essentially the same, right?
That would be the Juneau case.
The regulations and the new regulation.
Precisely.
And they can't be essentially the same if, in your view, if disease includes mental disease.
I'm sorry, Your
Honor.
Well,
they can't be essentially the same, in your view, because the later regulations make clear that there's no room for a mental disease.
Well,
then the earlier regulation should be interpreted the same way.
I would say that essentially the same is not the same as exactly the same, and certainly we acknowledge that a change was made to the regulation and the diseases clause was deleted. And it is conceivable that a certain claimant who has an identifiable disease that was caused by a physical injury could conceivably be entitled to compensation under the prior regulations, but not the current regulations. But that is not this case, and there is, at a minimum, substantial evidence in the record to support the Bureau's determination.
So what is this case? In this case, is your position that there was a change, and it's retroactive, and that ends it?
It's our position that the regulations were changed, and that pursuant to Congress's mandate, they should be applied retroactively. And if the court agrees with us there, then there's no dispute.
Congress did not mandate that it be applied retroactively. It was silent. So what are you telling us?
Well, as we address in our...
If it was retroactive, that we wouldn't be having this debate.
I'm saying the narrowest ground for the courts to resolve this case, I think, is to hold that it doesn't matter which version of the regulations apply. If the court wishes to address the retroactivity question, I think that the provisions in 3796C2 clearly does apply to all regulations promulgated pursuant to the Public Safety Officers Benefits Act for the reason.
Even if the statute hadn't been written in 2012, which the government says is Congress saying apply the new regulation retroactively. If they haven't done that, the agency here applied the new regulation retroactively.
Yes.
Right? And so isn't there there's a due process question right there?
What applied the regulation retroactively
yes.
in 2013 after the statute was
amended? Assume the 2012 act had never happened.
Certainly.
And what the agency does is the agency says, well, you got injured in 1990, whatever, and the regulation that we would ordinarily apply would be the regulation extant at the time of your injury and the time when you filed your claim, but we've had a later regulation, so we're going to apply the later regulation.
Yes.
Agency can't do that in an arbitrary and capricious way.
Certainly not.
So a due process comes into the case no matter how you look at it.
Well, and not just due process, but in that case, in that scenario, then you would be in the Princess Cruises Landgraf
sure.
world, which is not
sure.
at issue here because there is...
Yeah, but say we assume that we look at this situation and we just throw that 2012 Act out because it kind of messes up the analysis and say it's perfectly clear here that... Ms. Harrison has a claim that she wants to mount under the old regulation. And the agency said, I won't listen to it because under the new regulation, that argument won't apply.
Well, I don't think that the court should or could throw out the 2012 amendments because...
No, but I'm just saying the due process question to me is exactly the same, whether we're looking at it by saying, can this statute pass muster?
Understood, Your Honor.
And statute, can the regulation pass muster as a retroactive regulation?
Understood, and in either scenario then, there would be a rational basis to support Congress's decision that the current regulations should be applied uniformly and consistently retroactive.
I've never thought about it, but I'm not sure that it's exactly the same due process review. We know that due process review on a retroactive statute has a fairly low threshold. And we know that the court can divine the rational basis itself. When an agency is applying a regulation retroactively, I'm not certain that that same low threshold due process test works or whether there's a higher measure of scrutiny.
I'm not aware of any case law to suggest that there that any different standard
applies. Nor am I. I'm just saying there's a vacuum.
Can you know that?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chief.
Thank you. Taking up with the due process issue that was just mentioned, when you're dealing with a retroactive statute, there is a much stricter analysis of those kinds of cases. If we go to the Bowen case, you're required to have express terms requiring clear intent assures that Congress itself has affirmatively considered the potential unfairness of retroactive application and determined that it is an acceptable price to pay for the countervailing benefits. And there is none of that in the legislative history. There is nothing to show that Congress weighed the potential unfairness to the claimants and that they made an affirmative action in this case to decide to.
Your concern is that she was treated unfairly. Why is it that she didn't show up for her hearing?
It's because she suffers from panic disorder, Your Honor. She's been diagnosed with agoraphobia, which is, again, beyond just the PTSD. We're dealing with somebody who basically is unemployable because she can't leave her house most mornings. And that was the problem, was that she is...
But there's no indication that she provided any explanation. She just simply didn't show.
This is before I had the case, obviously, Your Honor, but she was actually in the building and could not bring herself to actually appear. And that is a symptom of her agoraphobia and of her panic disorders and of the other related psychiatric disorders. So we're dealing with not just PTSD, but a whole host of psychiatric disorders. And in this case, again, counsel brought up the fact that our client has been examined by doctors, and that was part of the reason for the delay. She has never been examined by a government psychiatrist. The government apparently decided not to have a psychiatrist examine her. So there's there's no psychiatric finding from the government to show that our client's stress and psychiatric disorder was a result strictly of her knee injury, or whether or not it was part and parcel of the knee injury and basically the circumstances surrounding how she suffered the knee injury. I will say this, though, that part of the delay was attributable to our asking for more time. We needed more time to basically get everything together. So I want to give the agency credit for doing that. However, from the time that Dr. Beck's report was presented to the agency in January 2013, there was a delay of more than 3 years before the agency rendered its decision in this case.
Well, you started off by your argument that you don't think that this particular 2012 statute is really a retroactive statute because it doesn't have all of the earmarks from case law. But where does that get you? I mean, what you have here is a later regulation that was applied to your case.
Right.
And am I wrong in thinking that if there's the question, due process question there, is whether there's a rational basis for the agency to apply the statute, the regulation retroactively?
Well, I think if we take the 2012 Act out of the picture, it's basically, is this agency allowed to engage in retroactive rulemaking without that, without any express authority from Congress to do that? And I would say no under the Princess Cruz's test, that runs against the our understanding of how American law is supposed to work.
Why is that so?
If we look at the Princess Cruz's test, here there was a substantial change in the regulation after Regina Harrison filed her claim, and it had an effect. It had a direct effect on basically what her behavior was, and it violates basic due process of fair notice. When Regina Harrison showed up to work on the 24th of October in 2001, this benefit existed for people who suffered some forms of stress under the ANCO exception, and that was eliminated after the fact. That was eliminated retroactively, and so I think that in all three parts of the Princess Cruz's test, that the agency was required to apply the regulation as it existed on the day she filed her claim. Now, the government is now saying, well, we have this later statute that allows us to do what we've been doing all along anyway.
Can I go back, because I'm really disturbed by your response about somehow we're supposed to believe that she was in the building and afraid to go, when there's actually statements in the record from your clinic saying to the director that the reason she didn't come is because her husband was controlling and he convinced her not to go. Now, are you just coming up with new facts that you think sound better?
Or, no, I'm
you're, I mean, why would you make that argument and not make your other argument before the director and now try to tell us that it was a totally different circumstance?
I think it was I was not there that day, so I cannot say for certain. The husband has been controlling over the years. They are no longer together.
She did have the advice of legal counsel, as they say right here, when she made the decision not to show up.
Yes, she
affirmatively declined to attend the hearing.
I don't think she did, Your Honor. I think that's a fact question that would have to be developed.
But it's not a fact question that has to be developed, because your clinic specifically told the director that she made a decision to decline not to come, and she did it because, you know, she was under the thumb of her husband, not because she was too incapable of showing up.
I think there was a combination of reasons, Your Honor, but it is correct that the letter from my student attorneys did indicate that. But that was one of the many factors. We're dealing with a client or with the petitioner here who is an extremely damaged woman. That's basically what Dr. Beck said. This is the most damaged woman that patient that he's ever had to deal with in his 30 years of practice. So I think there was that the letter was incomplete as to what the rationale was for her not appearing at the hearing. It was, I believe, that if we look at Social Security hearings, that if a client is suffering from a mental disorder and does not show up for her Social Security hearings, I believe it's the common practice to take to take that into consideration. I wish my client had been there, but she wasn't.
Well, I think we have the story as well as we can. Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.
Thank you.